It has to be, okay, I'm a black business. I'm providing a valuable service that is excellent. It's quality. And I have great customer service. And the interaction is positive, right? Because when that's the case, I don't have to be out here like, yo, I'm a black business, support me, da-da-da-da-da.
Support, man.
Automatically, you love the way business was done. You left feeling positive about the interaction and the transaction, and now you want to.
This episode of the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast is sponsored by 17th Watches. 17th Watches aims to be a pioneer in watchmaking style, creating a perfect union between simplicity and class. At 17th Watches, time is the only luxury. You can find 17th Watches at 17th-watches.com.
Have you wanted to invest in the booming Detroit real estate market but didn't know where to start? Have you heard about the amazing prices to purchase properties but are scared to jump because you didn't have a team? Well, this is the perfect tour for you. Asia Denton of Denton Construction Services and the Detroit Property Shop will show you the real Detroit, the good, the bad, and the downright ugly. We will tour historic up-and-coming neighborhoods and see a few houses that are in the process of being rehabbed. We will also tour some homes that are for sale and will be able to make offers on the spot. Here's some reasons why you should attend. First, you'll be able to see the real Detroit, the areas they don't show you on the news. Second, you'll be able to view the properties that are for sale and buy them on the spot. Third, you'll be able to visit properties that are currently being rehabbed by Asia's team or an affiliate of hers. Lastly, you'll be able to meet local real estate agents, brokers, title agents, financing companies, and property management companies. The cost is $1,500 per person. There's limited seating available. However, there is an early bird special for the first 10 people to sign up that is half off, $750. The event will be held on the weekend of September 19th through the 20th and will consist of a meet and greet, a networking social, and a big tour of the city. Feel free to contact Asia by phone or text today at 313-288-8051 or at 1-888-225-1533. Make sure to let them know that Todd Capital sent you.
SellerFinancingOnly.com. Do you own a home, condominium, apartment building, or land free and clear? Have you ever considered selling it? Well, not just sell it. You hold the mortgage and become the bank. Welcome to the world of seller financing. Instead of the potential buyer getting a mortgage from a bank or credit union, you give them the mortgage. You set the interest rate. The buyer pays you every month for 5, 10, 15, or 30 years, whatever you and the buyer agree on. Seller financing only. Join us today.
All right, so this is the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast. This is episode number 73. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Tide Millionaire. I'm the founder and the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club. We have 220 members. We have about 80 people that are waiting. We're actually onboarding them as we speak. We also run Tide Acquisitions that has 3 properties cash flowing. We're on 1 property that's going to be finished up. It's going to be Bird. So we bought it. Nice. We're in the process of rehabbing it, and we're going to refinance out all the equity we put into it. So at that point, we'll have none of our money in it. It'll be 100% financed, as Juan Pablo would say. So thank you all for tuning in. The purpose of this podcast is to share the stories of successful African-American investors and business owners, especially business owners. I think that's kind of where I want to take the show for a little bit. A few of the episodes, I want to talk to some African-American business owners because we believe that business and investing are the true keys to financial success and generational wealth. With us today, we have the founder of Noir B&B,
yes, sir.
Mr. Stefan Grant. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and the ventures that you have going on right now?
Yeah, most definitely, man. So like Brother Charles said, my name is Stefan Grant. I'm the co-founder of Noir B&B. I was born in Jamaica. I moved to the United States in 1995. Moved to South Florida. Grew up here from about 1995 to until I say about 2007. Then I moved to Los Angeles, lived there for a year, and then I moved to Washington, D.C. and lived in D.C. for about 8 years. So, but I've done everything from party promotion, that's what I was doing when I was like in my teen years, to like marketing, promotion, was in the music industry for a long time. I had my own record label called Docents ADA with a couple of my partners, I had clothing lines, and a lot of different stuff like that. But recently, before I started Noir B&B, I was really heavy into like event hosting, event coordination, different stuff like that. So that kind of led to my transition and starting Noir BMU, because I mean, one, just traveling often for music and just being a traveler in general. And on top of that, my parents actually met in the travel industry in Jamaica. So like that was kind of like me carrying on tradition in a lot of ways. But yeah, so a lot of that led to me forming Noir BMU and essentially just creating a new travel platform for Black people around the planet.
I like it. I like it. It's so cool because I think I found your page because, I mean, when all that Airbnb situations was happening, mm-hmm. and you were getting a lot of publicity. People were talking about Noir BNB. Mm-hmm. People were talking about, like, this is a way to go. How did that, quote, tragedy present an opportunity for you and your business?
Well, the funny part about that is, so, when I was heavily into my music career, my stage name was Steph is Dope, right? And of course, I mean, like, people understand what the term dope means colloquially, but I took it and I created a kind of an acronym, right? And the acronym stands for Driven On Positive Energy, right? So whenever something kind of negative or even crazy is going on, my entire spin is, how can I make it and shift it in the positive direction, right? So when everything happened with the police officers and everything, I was like, all right, well, look, this is a crazy situation, but one, taking just the positive mindset and also my marketing mind, I was like, well, look, I'm going to take this and I'm going to make it into something good. And before the police officers left, I was like, well, look, I asked them if we could take a selfie together. And they were like, yeah. One of the officers was like, yeah, as long as you get my good side. So I was like, all right, cool, bet. So me and my homie and these two police officers took a photo and I posted it on Twitter. I was like, man, the place we're staying at is so dope. The cops thought we were robbing the place. The neighbors thought we were robbing the place and called the cops. So the cops came, I posted it on Twitter. And the next thing you know, a couple minutes later, one of my friends hit me and was like, yo, like, your post is about to go viral. And sure enough, it did. And all that led to us essentially sitting down with Airbnb and trying to figure out ways where we can kind of solve the problem and stuff like that. And eventually, we kind of realized that they weren't as adamant or as passionate about solving the issue as we were. And we figured out, like, well, look, there's an issue in the community, especially in the Black community, and we can provide a solution for it and provide a new platform for ourselves. It just made sense for us to do that. So that was my entire thing, man. And I feel like if you're gonna, not only should we shift things in a positive way, just on a human level, but also if we can create a business and create opportunities for people within our community while also solving a problem, it just made sense to me, man. So yeah.
I think what's really cool about that is, first, I didn't know that you were the person who got the cops called on them.
That's crazy.
But another thing, what you said is something that I kind of fundamentally believe, and it's kind of something that I think I've taken from Magic Johnson, is mm-hmm. like, when you solve your problems, you can add that special touch, that special exactly. added emphasis that your community is going to really like, and it kind of gives them a better customer experience. It gives you a better product, better yeah. brand. But also yeah. another thing that you said is, like, they weren't as adamant about the problem as you were.
Yep.
And a lot of that is because they don't really feel the actual effects. They hear yeah. about it, but it's like, it's one thing to hear about it. It's another to live it.
To really
experience. So like, what I thought was really cool as I was driving home is the fact that, like, everything that I talk about in regards to, like, the Netflix thing with Monique, mm-hmm. or there's so many examples, I can't even really name them all, the nail salon situation,
yep.
is, it's like, you can either complain about it and you can try to get them to love you, or you can just create your own and ultimately create wealth for your children and your family and improve your community. So that's what's so cool about, like, the fact that you did it. So,
I appreciate that.
I mean, how did you get that mindset? Most people, they don't think like that. Most people, they're the complete opposite. They're doing like, oh, Airbnb, they need to change their policy. We need to protest. Like, why do you think about that differently than the average person?
I would say it's a variety of things. Because I mean, I feel like I went through my phase, especially in my teen years, where I was just kind of like very anti-establishment, anti-this, anti-that, really thought that if you were, in a lot of ways, I mean, people have the mindset of, like, if you're a successful person, then you've probably done something wrong to get it. But at the same time, I also had a mindset where I'm looking at cats like Jay-Z and cats like Dr. Dre and Diddy and all these guys. And I'm like, all right, well, like, I'm watching them create something out of nothing, out of dire situations, and make something great happen. But even beyond all that, I think, well, one, a big part of it is just
my Jamaican upbringing, the stereotype is that we always have a million jobs, and in a lot of ways, that's really true. So, I mean, my mom's always been somebody who's just always been very forward-thinking and always had a crazy work ethic. My dad had always had a crazy work. I watched him get up every day and get to work and make things happen. So I think having that just in my genetics, like, was always an inspiration. But even beyond all that, there was a shift, I'd say, maybe when I was about 19, 20. I came across the movie The Secret, which is all about, like, the law of attraction and just stuff like that. And I love a lot of the new age thinking, but even beyond all that, I wanted to find really more practical things that I could kind of mesh with that. So I think I read one of the pivotal things for me was Think and Grow Rich, was definitely a major thing for me. And beyond all that, also just studying the stories of a lot of people who've become millionaires and billionaires, and not just your Black success stories, but also your white success stories. I feel like a lot of people have this conception that a lot of the wealthy white folks just always came from wealth and made it happen. But a lot of the people who are titans of industry now really came from really humble beginnings. So I was like, well, if they can do it, I feel like I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So just looking at that and seeing those examples, it's like, you know what, if they can make it happen, if I can come up with an idea that adds value to society, I can do the same thing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's something that I try to do. And that's why I really read a lot of biographies. I'm actually reading the Omarosa book right now.
Oh, which nice.
Is kind of, it's kind of a biography. It's a lot of people, they think it's just like a Trump bashing book, but yeah. It kind of gives you that inside experience. And she plays both sides of the fence. Mm-hmm. It's not so biased as like a CNN or MSNBC, but it's also not 100% Fox News. So I think it's a good book. It's a good read, but you also learn a lot about who she is as a person and a lot of the things that she did to kind of help African Americans and give them a voice inside of the Trump White House, which I think a lot of people don't know. But now that we're talking about Trump, now that we're talking about Trump, what's your outlook? Like, what do you think should be the game plan? We all know, like, he's the president for 3 more years. Mm-hmm. You can sit around trying to get him impeached. You can sit around, you can just complain and whine, or you can strategize. Like, what do you think should the game plan be going forward in a Trump 3 years more of a presidency?
I'm gonna be completely honest. One, before he even became president, I pretty much predicted that he was gonna be president. I mean, I pretty much, especially someone who has a marketing mind, I saw just the way he was working and the way he was speaking in his platforms, and I was like, oh yeah, this guy's gonna win. And a lot of people thought I was crazy for saying that. One of my roommate at the time, actually, we actually bet some money, and I still haven't gotten my money from that bet. But I mean, I knew he was gonna win. And my philosophy and my hope before he won was, I was like, all right, well, look, maybe this is what Black people in America and around the world need to wake up, right? And I was hoping, I mean, because like once Obama became president, I feel like a lot of us were like, okay, we crossed the finish line, we made it, it's all good, we can chill and we can relax. Now we made it to the promised land, the mountaintop, it's all good. And I think that should have been the time where we really got politically active and really follow through to make sure that a lot of our needs were met and our demands were met. But I think that because a lot of us got so relaxed that it just put a lot of us to sleep. And I was hoping that, all right, well, if Trump bothers so many people in our community so much, maybe that would inspire them. Okay, look, like, we got to wake up, join forces, unite, because at the end of the day, like, all we have is our community and our voice. We need to unite, not just on a moral victory level where we're, and this is coming from somebody, I've been a part of protests, I was out there with the loudspeaker, like, walking through DC and the whole nine, but at the same time, like, there's only so much of that you can do, right? You can raise awareness, but also at the same time, you've got to join forces economically, politically, socially. I mean, and I was hoping like that's what we would do. And I feel like in a lot of ways, that's actually splintered us more, because now we have this thing where it's like, okay, you're a conservative, I'm a liberal. Like, since we have that opinion, I can't even have a conversation with you, let alone build with you. And I think that's an issue, because as Black folks, we shouldn't, me personally, this is my personal opinion, I don't think we should have any kind of loyalties to any political party, because at the end of the day, like, our situations and our circumstances are very unique. Now, if a politician is speaking in terms that may benefit you, that may be cool, but unless you unless you have some kind of lobby and some kind of political body in place to guarantee that your needs are going to be met, I'm not sure that there's much conversation to be had. I think that as Black folks, we need to just unite, and that's me being an idealist. I'm not sure how realistic and how feasible that is. But what I would say is, based on as Black people, like, we're very resilient. We're probably the most resilient people on the planet. We're all about being resourceful and being adaptive. And I think that what we have to do is adapt to the circumstances. And if we're being completely honest, I mean, there was an article that I came across. You actually might have shared it. I think you did share it, and you got a lot of hate for it. It was just talking about the amount of new Black businesses that have popped up. And I think that a lot of people aren't paying attention to the fact that right now is probably the time that you would want to start a business or get into anything finance related. I mean, before Trump even became president, somebody said that whatever the president is into or that you know about them, like, that's the industry that you want to get into, right? So being that Trump is a real estate guy and a finance guy, I mean, that's not the reason I got into real estate. I'd always had the interest, but it was also kind of reaffirming, like, okay, like, this is what makes money. He's obviously a money guy. That's probably going to be one of his primary focuses. Like, this should be the time when, as they say, we should be trying to secure the bag, right? So, I mean, like, that's really what I would say, man. Like, the most important thing to me, I believe, is us getting our families together and our communities together. And if we can build on an economic level, and I feel like that will help us build on every other kind of level. So, but, yeah.
Absolutely, man. Cool. So, with the Trump presidency, with a lot of these things that are going on, there's been this push to buy Black. And yeah. I 100% support it. What's your view on just that whole concept of buying Black, supporting Black businesses, the LeVar Ball family, like all that stuff? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Man, honestly, I love that, man. I think one of my ideal goals, I know you're a big fan of Jay Morrison, but what he's doing with the Tulsa Real Estate Group, I think that's incredible. But if we can not only support our businesses, but also know that money's being continuously circulated and we're actually benefiting each other and future generations of Black folks, I think that's the most important thing, man. Because, I mean, realistically, the thing that really makes this country run and makes the world run is money. Like, that's just a fact of the matter. And if you can have something for yourself and your family now, but also leave something behind, like, you're providing a foundation for your family to not only survive, but really thrive and flourish, right? And I think the most important thing is, it's like, I was talking to one of my good friends, my best friend actually, earlier, and it's like, if you want a plant to grow, right, you got to water it and you want to put it in the sun and provide the best environment for it to be what it's going to be, right? And for us, I believe that's the most important thing, like, having the economic foundation, the economic base. And every other community practices, like this isn't some foreign concept that's like some new age, like, Ponzi scheme. It's common sense. It's like, yo, you spend the money in your community and you'll get it back. I mean, me personally, if I can, like, my boy owns a Rasta vegan restaurant. It's probably like 30 minutes away, right? Great, incredible food. I could go to some whatever restaurant next door. And sometimes I do that, but consciously I make the decision to, if I'm not going to support his restaurant, I'll support another dope Jamaican restaurant, or another dope soul food restaurant, or another dope Haitian restaurant, whatever I can, because I know for a fact that in whatever little way I'm helping to support that company being sustainable and creating more jobs for our people. So, yeah, I mean, it's just common sense, honestly.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. I think that, I forget who said it, but she said that if we don't practice group economics, it'll take us like 200 years to close the wealth gap.
Yeah, pretty much.
And what I always tell people is, the interesting thing about group economics is it amplifies your spending power.
Yeah.
Because that dollar then becomes like $10, $20. Yep. As many times as you bounce that dollar, you've amplified your spending power. Mm-hmm. So what would take you forever, if you participate in the economy as it exists and you just keep running that same course, spending all your money on Gucci and in French designers and giving all your money to Asian communities, whoever it is for that matter, like, you're just taking yourself back. So the gap becomes bigger. Yep. And you can't, if you don't take steps forward, either you're going to stay where you are, it's going to get worse. Because I was watching, I don't watch Yvette that often, but she was saying, like, like, do you think that in your effort to close the wealth gap that white people are just doing nothing? Like, no, they're still building. They're still stacking. Asian people are still bouncing. So it's like, if you don't do anything, or at worst, you just go, it's even like you just take steps back, you're going to lose even more, which is crazy. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the way I think about it is it's a couple of ways, right? Because the fact of the matter is the game is the game, right? And it's like you can act like you're not going to play the game, but the game will continue on without you. So it's like you're just losing on purpose. But not even just – it's not even just that on a deeper level, right? It's like you're playing – everybody else is playing basketball and you're out there in – football pads because you don't feel like you want to play. You want to play this game, right? You don't want to play that game, but it's like, yo, this is the game you're in, right? You can dress in football pads all you want, but like, you're not like, this isn't the game being played right here, right? So it's like, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's difficult for us. I get the rebellion, right? I understand the rebellion and our resistance to the system, bitch, is based on the hundreds of years of oppression that he's gone through. I can get that. I can understand that. But at the same time, when you got people who are playing the game as it is, and they're winning, and they're changing their circumstance, and now the pendulum is swinging in their favor, and now they have the power to change laws and rules and whatever to work for them, it's like, why would you not follow that blueprint? Because it makes sense. It's right there, right? But I think beyond all that, like you said, first of all, other communities are moving ahead. They're not slowing down or stopping because I think Claude Anderson. Yeah, Dr. Claude Anderson. He said that one of the things that hit me so hard. He said that racism is a team sport, right? And that's really what it is, right? So it's like my whole thing is that. Even in other communities, like whether you want to say white communities, Jewish communities, like one of the things that I heard about is the fact that like they can beef with each other, and one dude can tell the other dude like, yo, whatever, whatever, F your mother, whatever, whatever, and then the next day, if a deal comes in, he'll call that same dude tomorrow like, yo, bro, I got a $100,000 deal, what's good? And his homie's like, man, what's up? So at the end of the day, forget that whatever petty little BS he went through yesterday, like this deal could feed your kids for the next 50 years, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, forget the petty BS, forget the petty drama. Like at the end of the day, this is our team. Like we're all on the same team, whether we like it or not. Why not ensure our victory in the best ways possible, man? And but on the main thing as far as just supporting black business, I think it's a two-sided thing, right? It's not just we can't just say, yeah, I got a black business, give me your money, right? It has to be, okay, I'm a black business, I'm providing a valuable service that is excellent, it's quality, and I have great customer service, and the interaction is positive, right? Because when that's the case, I don't have to be out here like, yo, I'm a black man, support me, da 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 da.
Support, man.
Like, automatically, you love the way business was done, you left feeling positive about the interaction and the transaction, and now you want to. And I think the issue is that too many of us don't consider that. Like Chick-fil-A is like the number one fast food chain right now, and they're literally missing a day of revenue. Yeah. Right? They're missing a day out of, while everybody else is 7 days a week, they're six. That's their principle. But they make up for that in their customer service for one, their quality of food for two. Even the way they do their drive-throughs and how they map out their entire construction of their building was thought out, right? And like, that may be small to someone else, but that has a reverberating effect that people like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, like we got to factor in, okay, yeah, you want the support, but also make sure that whatever you're doing is up to par and excellent and worthy of that support at the same time. So it's a double-edged sword, man.
Yeah. So you said a lot of good things that I like, and I kind of want to touch on, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go out of order. But yeah, the first thing you said is that racism is a team sport.
Yeah.
And one thing I like to tell people is like everything is a team sport.
Yep.
Like if you look at the government, it's a team sport. If you look at big business, it's a team sport. They look at Google and you say, oh, well, Google has two founders. Like, no, they have a staff. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk has a staff. Mm-hmm. And so like that's one thing that I'm very big on. The entire Tac Capital organization is built on it being a team sport. Mm-hmm. And I've kept that as a tagline. I don't think I'll ever change it because you can't play a team game as an individual.
Yep.
And I think that in a lot of ways, even, no matter how good of an individual you are, we've seen it. You saw LeBron James try to take down the Warriors.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of us are doing. A lot of us are trying to be LeBron James. Mm-hmm. We need to be trying to be the Golden State Warriors.
Yep.
Because everybody else out there is the Golden State Warriors.
Yep.
And so, like, that was the first thing you said that I liked a lot. The second is one thing that really concerns me is when you use that metaphor of people playing basketball and people wanting to play football, is there are people like us that are out there saying, we need to play basketball. Let's put together a basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, like, nah, you selling out. You trying to play, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's America. In America, we play basketball, brother.
Yeah. People talk about playing the game and selling out. And I think often think about the debate between socialism and capitalism. And people think that capitalism started with slavery. And that is why we have the system that we have now. And I'm like, capitalism is the exchange of value. Capitalism has been around. People want to talk about how woke they are and whatever else. Capitalism existed in Africa for like how do you think these civilizations got as wealthy as they did? Like wealth creation has been around forever. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you can't say you're selling out when really, like, I'm actually going above and beyond to assist my community, because being an entrepreneur really isn't some glamorous like task. Like, really, it's one of the most stressful and strenuous things you can do. People don't see the sacrifice that you're actually putting in to assist your community while they're calling you a sellout. But I'm sorry to cut you. Yeah.
But I think that entrepreneurship, if done right, really does add value to your community. Yeah. And I think that's why we need more entrepreneurs and maybe less nonprofits. Although there are some good nonprofits, but generating profit for your community is not a bad thing. If you generate profit, you have an abundance, you have more than enough, which you can then pour into developing your community. So then you have more than enough, so you can start building skyscrapers, you can start building better homes, you can start putting parks, you can start improving your community. If you don't attain a profit, you can never get there. You become what Jay Morrison calls a crumb snatcher.
Yeah.
So you've started a bunch of companies. One that I know of is Noir B&B. You said you had a strategy meeting last night. Was that for Noir B&B or was that for a different venture?
Yeah, that's for Noir B&B. Cool. Yeah.
So how did you start a company like that? Like, what's the process for starting an online? Everybody wants to start these tech companies. How did you start something like that?
Man, that was definitely, of course, a very unique process. That was my first tech company. I've wanted to start a tech company for years. I'd say since about maybe 2011, 2012, I've had the bug to get involved in tech. But that starting a tech company is definitely an entire different animal. The first part of the process was essentially finding out if we even had a business that people would care about, right? So before we actually announced Noir B&B, I had the domain for maybe about 6 months before anybody even knew about it. I made a Twitter account and a bunch of other social media accounts, but they had nothing on them, because this was actually in the time that we were negotiating with Airbnb to see whether Noir B&B would be a platform within their platform or if we were just going to do it on our own. So eventually we ended up deciding to do it on our own, and we said, all right, well, look, this is a Friday, I believe, maybe June 3rd or something like that, 2016. And we said, all right, it's Friday. We're going to make that announcement. And if by the time Monday comes around and we have 100 email signups, then we know we have a business that we can kind of run with. And we made some like little BS landing page with some information. We didn't even have a logo or any type of real branding, but we said, we're going to make a landing page, collect emails. If we have 100 emails in 3 days, then we're going to make it happen. And we made the announcement, and next, you know, by the time Monday came around, we had about 14,000 email signups. So we were like, okay, like this is a business that people would care about, that people would actually like to use. Now let's actually build it. So the next thing was essentially filing the LLC stuff with the state. I already know, you know, like Todd Capital LLC, make sure you get the LLC from the homie. So we got the LLC, and then we had to actually, funny thing happened. So we made the announcement, but another guy tried to essentially copy the business model and literally steal the name and everything. So we were Noir B&B to try to copy that name. So we ended up having to trademark our name and that name, because they were basically gonna kind of infringe on our rights for our business. So we had to trademark the name, do the LLC, and then all the legal stuff with the co-founders, and then we eventually transferred that to now we're actually a corporation. We're incorporated, but like that was the initial formation. And essentially, it was finding, putting together, like you were talking about the whole team format. We had to put together our entire team. So there was me, my co-founder, G-Day. We had to bring on a designer to do all the art direction and creative direction, make our logo, all the branding, all that type of different stuff. We had to get a UX designer to design the essentially like the layout of what each page would look like. And when you make an account on Facebook or on Twitter or anything like that, you don't think about the process that you're going through, but there is a process. Like there's a sign up page, login, homepage, your inbox, whatever that may be, right? And like these things are like 20, 40, 100 pages, right? So like that undertaking and just thinking about that and finding the right people that can design what we need exactly in the right way was an incredible undertaking. But just finding that designer, finding a development team that could build the back end of our website, and just different stuff like that, and finding actual investors. Like we had to have like our friends and family besides ourselves is investing out of our pocket. We had to tell it to our family members and our friends, like, look, this is our business, invest in us, we're trying to make it happen. And a lot of them actually did. We have a large community of people who believe in us, who wanted to invest in the company. So there was that, and essentially just working on getting their product to market, and not just getting their product to market, but also marketing. So social media marketing, content, partnerships, and just tons of different stuff like that, man. But so it's essentially like just pitching it to friends and family, and that actually wasn't too hard because once we made the announcement and got it out there, we had gotten so much press from like Forbes magazine, Time, People, Business, Tech Insider, it kind of blew up crazy. So a lot of people had already known and they understood the vision, and just having that was cool, and having that support was cool. But it's a process, man. Like I said, the most important thing is your team. Making sure you have people that you can trust, people that understand the vision, people that understand the work that goes into it, especially before you even see any revenue and return on investment. So just making sure you have an airtight team and making sure that everybody knows what they have to do, putting your systems and processes in place. That's an invaluable piece of information if I can give you right there. And just being organized and as focused and disciplined as possible, and reading books. Like I just been studying a lot because this is my first tech venture. This isn't my first business, but I understand how business is supposed to be run. But at the same time, with business constantly evolving and this being a new industry that I'm joining in, it took a lot of studying, man. But it's just kind of getting out there and learning as you go. So yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. What when you raised funds, did you raise funds like as shareholders? So are they shareholders of the corporation? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool. And so when you did that, did you go through an attorney or you just did it and you issued certificates? How did that, what's that process so, like?
Well, one, we definitely had to have an in-house attorney kind of break down all the processes and kind of how that whole thing works. I mean, like you definitely don't want to play those kind of games, but we gave our essentially safe agreements to each investor.
You said a what agreement?
Safe agreements.
What is that?
So a safe agreement is essentially kind of letting you know, well, one, this is an investment. It's like there's no guaranteed return on it. You're kind of taking a risk, but also it protects the investor and protects the company in case we succeed or in case the company fails. So
nice. Yeah. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
How much do they charge you to put together all of the docs?
Oh man. With consultation and a lot of the docs we kind of had to be very frugal in that front, in the sense of just making sure that we had the right, of course you got a million websites like LegalZoom and other places like that, but like make sure we had the right documents to fit what we needed, but also having lawyers kind of go in and proofread and edit it to exactly our exact specifications. So I'd say that was maybe, I don't know, about 1,200 maybe.
Okay.
Around that range, yeah.
That's not that bad.
Yeah,
I've heard people spending like $10,000 on legal fees. So
oh yeah,
$1,200. That's cool. What's really cool is that you've set yourself up to the point where, as you scale, you could eventually take this thing public.
Yes,
and precisely. Cash everybody out. And that's dope, man.
And that's the goal, man. I mean, that, like not just to build a great company that's going to serve a market and be something cool, but also, I mean, if you invested in us because you believed in the vision, like you should reap the benefits of that. So that's what it's about. Especially, all of our team members who've been putting in the amount of hours and work that they have been. I mean, yeah, they definitely deserve to see a return on that for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's very cool. So what are some problems that you came up against as you were creating your company, and how did you guys overcome those?
Oh, man. Where do I even begin? I mean, every business has so many issues. I mean, I say the first thing was when you're launching a business and people care about it and they're talking about it and it's buzzed, and then you have another company essentially copy your entire, from your name to your business model, that was kind of hectic, especially when it's other people who look like you who are supposed to be on your same team. My goal was, at least I was like, all right, like if we can join forces, that would be cool. But we negotiated with them a little bit, but they were trying to like take 60, 70% of our company. And I'm like, we didn't even really know who they were. So there was that. And just the whole entire battle of having to cement your name. Because I mean, like these guys were like, say a journalist would write about us or a publication would write about us, they would write them and then try to get included in our articles and kind of ride our publicity wave. And like that was definitely kind of stressful in the very beginning. But so there was that.
So how did you guys shake them off? What'd you do to get them away?
Well, one, I mean, we definitely had to trademark the name, and we had to have our legal team send them a cease and desist. And that led to them eventually kind of changing their name and also changing their business model a little bit, which was, I mean, it was kind of cool. But I mean, at the same time, it's like when you're starting a business like this, and especially in tech, it becomes like it's a jungle in a lot of ways, right? Because I mean, we're all trying to get to market. We're all trying to serve a similar market, and it's a battle, man. So like there was that. Just differences with teammates on ideas when we should launch, if we shouldn't launch, if we should launch, this and that. Discrepancies with development teams. I mean, there was one development team who essentially wanted to just like take control of like all of our ideas and our development. Like it was just tons of different things, man. But I mean, at the end of the day, like the most important thing is, like I said, like having the right team in your core team who believe in the vision and understand what we're trying to do. Like when you have that, it's like not even an issue to overcome stuff. And now it's like whenever an issue arises, like it's almost like whatever, we just handle it, move past it, figure out a solution, execute it, and just keep it moving, man. So, but yeah, I mean, in business, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
I like it. I think what's really cool is like the hardest part is just getting started and getting going.
Yep.
And then, like you said, like now that you have your team, people know their role, you've been doing it for some time, you can hit the same problem you would have hit a year ago, and it's not even a problem anymore. It's just like the normal day in business. So it's like if anybody's listening, it's like take action now, get started, and a year from now, you'll be a year older. You can either be a year older with the business that's a year old, or you'll be a year older with that same idea that you never launched.
Yeah. So. And it's analysis paralysis, man. Like people, and that was actually one of the issues, because we had a team member who, they were just very anxious about us launching. And like whenever we were like ready to jump out there, they were like, nah, we shouldn't, because this and that. And like they didn't want their colleagues from whatever other things that they had worked on to see that and then not be up to par and like whatever else. And I'm like, look, every business has to constantly improve and grow. Like, and whatever we launch right now isn't going to be what we have a year from now or 2 years from now. So it's like, just get the business out there. But some people just, they're never able to take that first step, and that stalls them. And it's like, it's a shame, because how many good ideas do people have that could have changed the world and they just never acted on it? You know what I mean? So,
absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of my principles, the lean startup principle. You get that minimum viable product and you launch.
Yeah.
And I think that, and maybe we disagree on this right here, but I think that goes back to African-American business. Like it's one thing to start and not have everything together. You got to improve as you go. You got to reinvest the profits, but not having that perfect product should never be the reason why you don't get started.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree 100%. Yeah.
And I think that, like, I always talk about Facebook. Like, you look at Facebook, the old Facebook, when it was called the Facebook, it was trash.
The Facebook, in comparison.
Yeah. Exactly. Or like even Google, or all these companies start somewhere. Ford started somewhere. Tesla started somewhere. Nobody even talks about the Tesla Roadster. They only talk about the Model 3.
Yeah. I think people are afraid of criticism and they're afraid of failure, but you got to fail fast. You know what I'm saying? And it's so funny that you mentioned the lean startup, because like that was definitely one of my Bibles, especially in this process of building a startup, that I really sat down and had to hammer in my head and read a couple times, because it's like, yo, like, in this age, like, get your idea out there, see what works, see what doesn't work, and whatever doesn't work, fix whatever is working, double down, and just keep going, man. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So we've already kind of talked about some advice, but aside from launching, like as Gary Vee would say, is get started, get fancy later.
Yeah, exactly.
What other advice would you give to people who have that startup idea, have a tech idea, and they wanna get it started?
Oh man, I would say make sure you write out your idea, like from beginning to end. Make sure it makes sense. Think about how it really adds value and if people would really care about it. And the next thing is, before you share it with anybody, make sure you have an NDA. That's the most important thing. As a lawyer, you definitely understand, protect your idea, protect your intellectual property. That's the very first thing. And yeah, man, just get it, build it, and get it out there, man. Like that's I say that's the most important thing. But especially in, when it comes to tech, make sure you have your idea written out and yeah, man, just flesh it out and make it happen. Yeah.
Nice. So before I let you go, I want to talk to you about some of your tweets. You had a few that have gone viral. I know one for sure went viral. I think another one went viral. I don't have it stored on my phone, but what was the most recent one that went viral, and what was your thought behind that?
Oh man, damn. Well, there was a couple. One that was cool and one that went way left, like so left. I literally had to like mute it and I wanted to stay away from it. Like I still I'm staying away from it. But the most recent one that went viral was when I was talking about Michael Jordan, because like people hate on Michael Jordan and say like he's like he hates black people and this, this, and that, and that he invested in private prisons, but there's actually a white guy with the same exact name, Michael Jordan, and he's an investor in private prisons. And it's like, it just shows how much misinformation can just float around so easily. So there was that, and like that one kind of took off. But one of my other ones was, I said, socialism is cancer. The only way to cure black poverty is through black capitalism. And a lot of people got it. And my idea was, I mean, my intent behind it was essentially what we were discussing. It's like, if you want to solve black poverty in on a local or national level, like we have to create opportunities and make sure that we're educating each other on whether it be things that add, I mean, things like being like an electrician, like real trade jobs or finance jobs or real estate, like whatever, like creating that, having that financial education, and also creating business that we can add value and build our communities and make money from. And I feel like if we can implement and execute on that, that will solve the majority of our problems, right? Like that was my intent behind it, but people kind of took that and were like, oh, it's always some black dude with a suit in his Avi talking this madness. And I was like, and then like, yo, people were going viral off my tweet. Like they were retweeting it. Like I think the tweet itself maybe had like 300 retweets. But like one guy was like, look at this asshole. And his joint had like 1,000 retweets. And I was like, oh. Like, you know, like it was so bad that my tweet ended up on Reddit, and like it ended up on like some socialist Reddit thread, and they were going ham in there, like tons of hate. But some people were like, yo, like what he's saying makes sense. Like so, like some of that conversation was kind of cool. But yeah, man, if we're gonna be completely honest, I love Twitter, but I hate it at the same time, because you just want to have fun and express yourself and sometimes inspire, but then people will take even the most positive thing and be negative about it. And it's like, that sucks, you know what I'm saying? And it's cool because it gives you a glimpse into what people are thinking and what society is thinking, but it sucks because it's giving you a glimpse into what society is thinking. So I don't know, man, it's weird, man.
But yeah, Twitter, it's man. Interesting. Yeah. Cool, so I guess the last few questions is, what is your favorite business book?
Oh, man. Damn, my favorite business book. I almost want to say Think and Grow Rich, but I don't know if Richest Man in Babylon would count. I was going to say Rich Dad, Poor Dad, too, but like I know you're an avid Bigger Pockets listener, so that's almost cliche to say a Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but I would definitely say that book changed my life. But The Richest Man in Babylon was a major key for me because it's so simple, but it's pivotal, right? And I think the most important thing was not just saving your money, right, but also knowing what to invest your money in. And I think that
And not just that, making sure that your money works for you to multiply and create more money for yourself and future generations. I think that's an important thing, not just for business, but for life overall, man. So,
Nice. Yeah. Have you done any real estate deals you want to talk about? I don't want to leave that out if you have.
Oh, man. Honestly, because it's my first year, I've really just been in the books heavily. My first goal actually is for me and my wife to buy a multifamily, ideally a duplex. We're going to house hack it. So live in one side, rent out the other side. But she's also a teacher. So we've been thinking about for the third unit, maybe turning it into like a 24/7 daycare.
I like it.
With something like that. Nice.
That's genius. That's very smart.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you, how did you get your wife to go along with buying a multifamily property? Because not all women see the value in that.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it wasn't even really that difficult. I don't think there's really much of a convincing process, only because she sees how passionate I am about real estate. I mean, to be honest, I had been passionate about it, but her mom is actually the person who... my mother-in-law, sweetest lady ever. She is actually the person who paid for my real estate license and all that. So once I really got heavy into the real estate thing, I told her like, this is my vision, because at the end of the day, us as a family, our goal is to have financial freedom. And I'm always listening to bigger pockets when we're riding in the car. So I'm listening to it. And when she's in the car with me, she's listening to it just because she's there. And just off of that, she's kind of understanding like, this is how we build wealth. And start there, and just let it kind of build. So I mean, she got it. It wasn't that big of a thing yet.
I feel like the conversation has to be a numbers conversation. It can't just be like a house conversation, because if you're making it a house conversation, then you're looking at, I could have all this space as mine, or I could have an apartment.
And
I think that when you say like, yeah, you can have this apartment for 5 years, and you'll pay no rent, no mortgage. Mm-hmm. All the tenants will pay for it. And not only that, you also get a check for $1,000 every single month. Like, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
So you can either pay $3,000 to live somewhere, or you can have somebody pay you $1,000.
And I mean, she got that. And at the end of the day, it's like, it's as simple as minimizing your expenses and increasing your income. Like, I mean, that's the number one rule of business, I feel like. So, I really can't thank her enough, because she gets it. You know what I'm saying? Like, she gets it. I feel like she's always gotten it. She understands what the vision is. And we're very in alignment with just making sure that we can travel whenever we want. Like, whenever we do have kids, they can have whatever they need. If she wants to work, which she does every day, incredibly hard, thankful for that. But if she wants to work, she can. But if she doesn't want to, she won't have to. You know, and that's the ultimate goal, man. So yeah, bro.
Is your wife Jamaican?
She is Jamaican. She was born here, but both of her parents are Jamaican. So
interesting. Yeah, so, you guys, you remind me of the Delias. I think they're both. They might be both Haitian or something like, or from Trinidad. They're from Trinidad. That's
PR. Okay.
But anyway, they get it. She gets it. He gets it. Super dope couple.
Yeah, man, that's awesome.
Man, last question is: what does wealth mean to you?
What does wealth mean to me? To be honest, I think wealth is the ultimate freedom. You know what I'm saying? Like, wealth to me is peace, right? Because it's when all of your needs and expenses are being paid for, and you can also save, and you're not worried about if a health issue pops up, you've got money for it. If your future kids or family members may need whatever, it's there. Or you can provide an opportunity, a job opportunity, or a career opportunity. Like, you can do that. If I want to go spend a month in Jamaica on the beach drinking rum punch, I can do that. And if I want to spend whatever amount of hours in the office, I can do that. Like, having the options, that's wealth to me. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's specifically a number, but if when you're at peace and you can live happily, and you know that at least your basic necessities are taken care of, that's wealth to me, brother.
Nice. I want to go to Jamaica, but I've heard like certain parts aren't as tourist friendly as other parts.
I mean, that's everywhere. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, you can go to South Beach and have a good time, or you can go to like some crazy hood and not have a good time. You know what I'm saying? So that's everywhere, man. But actually,
good point.
We should make that a thing, because I'm actually planning a trip. Anyway, like I want to do like a squad trip or sometime, maybe 2019, especially like maybe something through Noir B&B anyway. So maybe that can be a thing we kind of work on. Noir B&B, Todd Capital,
like, man, like, little realistic getaway. It could be really cool.
And honestly, I mean, make it a thing where anybody who's focused on Black business, real estate, wealth building, like make it like a vacation trip and a work business, you know what I'm saying? Progressive trip, man. So yeah, I'm good, man. Let's make it happen.
That'd be so dope.
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. All right, so where can people find out more about you, man?
Oh, man, you can go to my website, StephanGrant.co, StephanGrant.co. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, StephisDope. Steph is dope. Check me out, man. NoirBnB, NoirBnB.com. Check that out. One of my passion projects. I love art and design and just creativity in general. So Polymath Design Co. just released our second season. And yeah, man, that's pretty much everything right there.
Cool. So this has been episode 73. I think it's 73. Feels like 73. If you're interested in joining either the Investment Club for Stocks, the Investment Club for Real Estate, or if you want to work with Todd Consulting, email us at membership@capitaltodd.com or myself at charles@capitaltodd.com. My name is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire. This is episode number 73, signing off.